Hi there, and welcome to Let's Slow Down, a podcast for all of you who feel tired and stressed from this overwhelming world. Here we'll have fun, inspiring conversations about living life on our own terms and explore ways to ease the pace of our modern world, because life really is good when you're relaxed enough to be present for it. I'm your host, Anne-Marie Stolting, and I welcome you to this space where I hope to inspire you to slow down, because life is too short to let it go by in a blur. So take a deep breath, relax, and enjoy the show. Today's guest comes to us from Toronto, Canada. I am so excited to talk with Sarah from Simple Intentional, host of the popular podcast, blog, and Instagram page. Sarah is a decluttering coach, wife, and minimalist mama who helps overwhelmed moms take action, stay consistent, and get in control of their homes for good. Welcome to Let's Slow Down, Sarah.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm so excited to talk to you. I have followed you for a while and found you so inspiring. So looking forward to this conversation. Thank you. I always like to start off asking people, you know, what's your story? Please share a little bit about your story and what's inspired you to start all of this.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am a cancer survivor. It was almost 10 years ago, actually, I was diagnosed with stage 4 lymphoma. So I was really, really sick. And, you know, I'm a big believer in sort of the lessons in life and the things that happen that are hard and what they teach us. And for me, there were lots of good things about that experience. And one of them was, like, because I was so ill, I was off work for almost a year. And so I had all this time to really do a lot of deep work on myself, really examine my life and, you know, think about what mattered to me and what I valued. And I really discovered that I was a perfectionist, which I had always thought of as a good thing before that. Yeah. I would like say I was a perfectionist, when I just really felt it was like I had a high standard and like I cared about details. But, you know, as I dug into it more, I really learned that for me, it wasn't a positive thing. And I've since learned sort of that difference between like adaptive and maladaptive perfectionism. And I also really examined my people pleasing. So I would say like those were the two biggest shifts that came out of that experience, was that I realized I was a huge perfectionist and a huge people pleaser, and that I was often putting a lot of other people's needs before myself. I also came to the concept of self-love, which I really feel I didn't fully understand at that time, but, you know, I started to get a sense of. And so it sort of set me on this journey. I also had read The Minimalist's book, Everything That Remains. And so I sort of started digging into stuff and, like, you know, what is at the root of our behavior and our things and, you know, just, I guess, like getting a real sense of life. Whereas I think before I had really just been just on autopilot, sort of just following along with what happened and not really like setting out any real intention for my life. And so that was sort of the beginning part of it. And then, you know, I fast forward to becoming a mom about 4 years later. And I really like the stuff, I think I became clearer about that. And I started to really tackle it with more vigor at that point, because motherhood, I mean, anybody who's a mom or a parent has probably recognized how motherhood sort of forces you to become more aware of what matters. It really focuses in on like prioritizing and decision-making. I mean, I can't. And if you aren't doing those things, I think it becomes like super overwhelming. So that's what happened for me, is that I just realized like I couldn't manage all of it. I couldn't manage, you know, the meal planning and the chores and the cleaning and the household stuff and all the like the mental load as well as the physical load of what was all around me. So I started to just get rid of things, and it just made so much more space and lightness, and it just became easier to clean. And I didn't even really realize how much stuff I had. Like, I wouldn't have said that I had tons and tons of stuff before. We live in Toronto. You know, I rented. And it wasn't like we had a huge house that was like filled with tons and tons of stuff, but even still, I had a lot of stuff. So I think motherhood just really like was that final push. I sort of examined myself internally, and then I started to realize the connection between that internal stuff and my physical environment around me. So I really started to declutter, and I really haven't looked back. You know, I now find it so easy to get rid of things. I'm really not attached to things anymore. And I've really been able to become much more intentional about how I spend and what I consume as well. So I think maybe that's the long version, but it was sort of that cancer diagnosis and then coupled with motherhood that got me to figure it all out and to be where I am today.
So interesting. And I would think a cancer diagnosis, you know, or motherhood, like any of these big life moments are often what is the catalyst for any kind of change. And you had two in a very short amount of time. I love how you mentioned the lessons in life. These hard things really teach us very important lessons. And first of all, 10 years, congratulations.
Yeah.
It's been 10 years and I'm so glad you're doing well. Mm-hmm. And you've done so much in that amount of time. So many things you just said resonate with me because I never really called myself a perfectionist, but I definitely was, am, I think, what do the people say? Like a recovering perfectionist. I think that's kind of me. For a long time, I remember, especially when my kids were little, people want to just buy toddlers presents, right? We would get so much stuff and we didn't even really bring that much of it in ourselves. I was gifted. And I remember just being so overwhelmed by all the stuff in the house, exhausted from a full day of working and mothering, and then trying to clean all these things up and like organize. I used to buy so many bins and like different methods to organize. And it maybe worked for like a minute until they woke back up the next morning. And I was so overwhelmed by it. And I used to be really hard on myself. Because I thought, oh, why am I so being so type A? Like, I need to just loosen up, let this go. It doesn't matter. And I did that for a long time. I was hard on myself and thought it was, you know, something that was wrong with me. Like, why do I need it this way? And I really did start studying all of this. I started with the minimalists too. I had seen their first documentary, but I've read a lot of different books in that area now. And there is so much research and science behind how our outer world really, that clutter, physical clutter really does affect our mental state and our brain and how we operate. So there, it's very powerful.
Yeah, I think that it's something we've never really been taught. It's not really talked about. And like you said, you sort of took that on yourself and thought it was something wrong with you. And again, like I feel like these messages that we get, it's just like, oh, we need to relax, or we're type A, or we need it organized like this. And I don't know, they're not necessarily very positive towards women and mothers, but that actually our environment affects us a lot more, that they've studied that, than it does men. And that it's really, really okay for you to want your space to feel good to you, especially because we can acknowledge that women are largely carrying the mental load of all these tasks and responsibilities. So it's not just about having a tidy space. It's that when you sit down and you go to look around your space and there's a pile of things that are undone. Oh, that's laundry. That's mending. That's something that I need to return to somebody. Like, you look around and see how much you have to do. And I don't know that a lot of men necessarily sit down and see it the same way, you know, depending on your relationship with your partner. And so I think that wanting a space that restores you and feels good and is easy to manage is an ultimate piece of self-care. And it's very important.
I agree. And it's interesting. I've never looked at it that way as self-care, but it 100% is. And I have really learned to start looking at each room in my home as like, what is the purpose of this space? What are we doing in this space? So forget these picture perfect, like HGTV, which I love watching all of that stuff.
Yeah, it's inspiring.
It's right? Fun. It is inspiring. But then to like think about, well, what am I actually doing in this room? and then go from there. Okay, well, what do I need to do those things? You know, and starting with that why, that root of it, makes such a difference. It's changed the way that I look at my living space, and it has changed the way that I feel, because now I have rooms that I can go and easily do a quick tidy if needed, or, you know, the kids, the family, they also can do it quickly because we've got less. First of all, we got a lot less. And I, going back to what you said, like, I mean, even before we had kids, my husband and I lived in a 2-bedroom condo. It was not a big place. And when we moved, I do not know where this stuff came from. I mean, it was just like boxes and boxes and boxes. We didn't even know. I mean, we had a couple big closets. We were lucky to have that storage, but stuff was just shoved to the back. And then you know what? You buy more because you don't know you had it. And so there's a lot of waste there. And that was very eye-opening. I could not believe the amount of stuff we moved from a, you know, seemingly small house.
Yeah, it is really incredible what you can like pull out, because we, once it's sort of like, right, it's out of sight, out of mind, and yep. You forget about stuff. Like I remember when I did Project 333 in 2020, I did it, and it was, you know, I love the high structure of doing some sort of challenge when you're trying to tackle, you know, decluttering or any kind of change. It's really helpful to find some sort of structure.
Well, I know what Project 333 is, but why don't you share it for those who don't?
Yeah. So it's Courtney Carver's wardrobe challenge. And the idea behind it is that you pick 33 items, including, you know, outerwear and shoes and accessories. I think like workout wear, if you actually work out, and loungewear are exempt if they're for lounging and working out. But otherwise, the idea is you pick 33 items for 3 months and you wear those items. So it's kind of like for a season. And again, like there is flexibility in it, you know, if you wanted to have 30 items or like 37, whatever, you know, but the idea is you're sort of restricting your wardrobe, you're bringing it down to some essentials, learning to live with it. And then you really do see how little you wear and you recognize what you love. And when one of the things that she recommends in that, which I mean, I think a lot of people who talk about decluttering and getting rid of things recommend, it's one of my favorite methods. It's a maybe box. So everything that's not a total yes or total no goes in the box. And then you just pack it away. Like you don't have to get rid of it, but you pack it away. And what I found when I did that is that when I opened that box up, I couldn't even remember some of the items that were in there. Like they sort of surprised me. And I was like, oh yeah, that. And I think that's the reality when it comes to our stuff, is that the things that matter, you know, they matter. And the things that are maybes, they're tied to other things. Like they're tied to how much did it cost, or it was a gift, or wow, that's like a really good quality item. You know, I could use that, or it has value. But it's then recognizing what actually has value in your life, because you can have, you know, really expensive camping equipment, but if you never go camping, that's not valuable to you. Or you can have all these like incredible kitchen gadgets, but if you don't really cook that much, or you end up using the same things over and over again, they're just taking up space. And to go back to what you were saying about the closet, it's like if you go into your kitchen, I mean, I remember experiencing this feeling of having to dig through cupboards to get the things that you needed. And it's like, where's that thing? And then it's like climbing up on a stool to go up in the high cupboard and like dig the stuff out.
Yep.
And if you have stuff packed away that well, you know, aside from items like, you know, holiday items or whatever that you use once a year, you're not going to use them because it's a lot of extra work to get it out and to put it away. You're just going to figure something else out. So either decide those items matter to you and then clear out space for them and make them accessible to you, or let them go. And I think that the maybe box is a way of experiencing letting them go and then recognizing, actually, that isn't that valuable to me, you know, because we can really hide a lot of stuff in our homes.
Yes, we can. We can get good at it. We can really like have what looks like a very tidy, organized space, but it's like a Tetris game and there's a lot there. And I think that maybe box is great. And I've done that before as well, because there is like an element of fear, and people get a little scared about that, the finality of, okay, it's gone now, right? It was thrown out. It was donated. It is gone. There's no second guessing. Maybe I need this. So I think especially, I know I've used it a lot with my family. It's a great way, especially for kids, you know, as you're decluttering, and also for my husband who doesn't like to get rid of as much as I do. Yeah. All right. Well, put it in that maybe box for a while. So it's not scary. It's still there. Just put it away somewhere out of sight so that you can feel what it's like to live without it, with less. And like you said, half the time, you're not even going to know what's in those boxes. And when we did that big move from our condo to then our single family home, I also was about to have my first child. So like we moved in and my cousin will tell you, she basically set my entire kitchen up for me because I couldn't do it. I was calling her like, where's, you know, this item? Yeah. Do you know where you put it? And, you know, so we had our first baby. So things were a little bit crazy for a while. And I think it was a year, maybe longer. I stumbled on boxes that I hadn't unpacked.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and I think generally people can identify with that and would, you know, if they've experienced a move or something similar, would say that that's true for them as well. Because when you aren't using it regularly and you've gone so long without it, you can realize that it actually isn't that valuable to you. And then that's, you know, like just going back to also what you were saying about the fear, like it's interesting. I was listening to this podcast and this author was speaking about a book he wrote and it's called Scarcity Brain, but he was talking about the scarcity loop and just how actually we're wired for scarcity. Our brains have not really caught up with the modern world. And this is in like a lot of different ways, you know, you can think about it with like fight or flight and that sort of thing, but that we're still not fully evolved to deal with what's all around us. And there's so much on offer all the time so that we really are faced with things that draw out that sense of scarcity as well. You know, like social media with comparison, you know, just how easy it is to order things and have them arrive at your home. So I also think like for me, that was another level of learning that, hey, actually that scarcity that I really experienced and worked hard to shift. And it's not that I don't ever experience that anymore. And that's a piece of it too, is that once you have this self-awareness and you recognize these things, it's not that you're never going to experience those things again. It's just that you know it and then you can choose differently. And you're still going to make mistakes, but that when we can recognize that we actually all experience scarcity on some level and that it's normal and that that's like a part of who we are, then just having that knowledge makes it easier to not buy those items, not hold on to those things, and not compare ourselves in the same way, because it's going to be a natural piece of the puzzle for us.
Totally. Yeah. And even it does really affect how you approach things moving forward. Once it really sinks in and once you realize the value of it and start feeling that change and the feeling that comes with it, I notice it sometimes if there's a really good deal for something and I'll be like, well, it's only whatever, such a great price, but it's not a great price if you're not going to use it. So like you mentioned, like the camping equipment, if you don't camp, then it could be the greatest deal in the world, but it's still money you're going to spend and not use. So,
or it's going to be a great price again. Like that's the other thing that I think you can become a bit of an observer, that you can start to recognize, like, just because that's on sale now doesn't mean it's not going to be on sale again. Or the other thing that, like, when you sort of sit back and look, is that somebody is going to develop another version of that, or it might be a better version. And sometimes waiting for something will get you closer to what it was that you actually wanted. Or, you know, it may drop in price in general and then go on sale. Like, you know, I've seen a lot of that too, because for me, I would really get pulled by that. You know, it was like, oh, I got to get it now because this is the price. And unless you sort of have it on a list that you're like, you know, you're going to purchase, you've got a plan for it, and then it does suddenly come on sale, of course, there's times where that makes sense. That is like reasonable, but you want to sort of take that pause and examine it. Am I just buying it now because it's on sale? Because if it wasn't something I was planning on purchasing, or it's not something I need now, I can wait. Sales are cyclical and you can watch for it. And there could be a different version, or you may find that when you wait, sometimes the need or desire for that thing passes as well. because I've had things on a list. And then, you know, 6 months later, when I've gone back, I'm like, actually, you know what? I don't really want that anymore. Or, you know, I thought I needed that, but actually it's this I need. So, you know, you really want to sit on things and make sure that you're buying them for the right reason.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. And I think the minimalists do mention that, to wait something like 48 hours, which in our world of Amazon Prime, I mean, it's people don't wait 48 minutes. It's like, oh, click.
Yeah.
And, and in 48 minutes, it might be on your front stoop already. So it's kind of wild how fast everything is, just so fast.
Yeah.
So then, hence the slowing down.
Italy. And then it is hard for, like, knowing that this is hard for you and it's hard for your brain and that we're wired to respond to this. And then just having that knowledge, I think, is so powerful, because then you can be like, okay, it's not meant to be easy right now. And if I sit on this, this feeling is going to pass. I feel like that's sort of like, so much of it is the mindset, but that is one really powerful thought that has helped me through so much, is that feelings change and that this will pass. And I'm not going to feel like this for a whole lot longer. And that if I can sort of just be with it, I'll, you know, come to the other side of it, that momentary discomfort. Like, it's funny, I was just talking about this with my daughter, because, you know, a long time ago, I bought 2 tubes of toothpaste for her because they were on sale. And so I had an extra one. And the second one is like a mint flavor. And, you know, she doesn't really love it. It's like not her favorite. But I keep saying to her while we're brushing your teeth, this is like a momentary discomfort. This is something you don't really like. It's going to last 30 seconds. I bet you can do it. You know, I bet you can handle this discomfort. And there's so many instances like that that we can point out for ourselves. You know, I'm uncomfortable right now. I can handle this. This is going to be okay. I'm not going to feel like this in an hour. This is going to last for a minute. Can I do this for a minute? And just like really shift your mind around what you can handle, because you're so capable of doing so much more when you frame it that way and you think about it.
Yeah, we don't give ourselves enough credit very often, do we?
No, not at all. I don't think so. And there's examples. Like, the other thing that I love to do is look for evidence. And you know what? You can look for evidence in the world of people who have done incredible things, you know, that are far more than brushing your teeth with mint toothpaste. But you can look for examples. Like, look at all the athletes who have overcome physical challenges or physical disabilities and gone to do amazing things. Or look at people who were told they would never walk again or they would never this again, and then they decided that wasn't true for them. And so I think that our brains are so incredibly powerful. Like, I even heard this, I don't even know where, but you know when you are stretching and you feel that point where you're like, oh, I shouldn't push it because it's going to hurt me. And I heard somewhere somebody say, oh, that's actually like not true necessarily. And that, like, it's the discomfort, your brain trying to stop you. So now sometimes when I'm stretching, like, you know, you kind of gauge it for yourself, of course, you don't want to injure yourself. But then I sort of can say, oh, that's actually not going to hurt me. Like, I just need to sit with this longer. And I've now realized, like, actually, it's true. That discomfort, that feeling that I wanted to get out of so badly, when I stayed with it for 10 more seconds, you know, really shifted. So our minds are creating our reality. And so if we can choose different ways of thinking, shift our thoughts, flip them, reframe them, we can change our reality, which is incredibly powerful.
It's amazing. I've been reading a lot about that as well, and it's fascinating. We try to protect ourselves. I guess our brain is going into that protective mode, kind of like what we were saying before. It's still wired from centuries ago when we were living very differently than we are today. And it's okay to push through a little bit of discomfort. And you were just saying, sometimes it's like 10 seconds. We can do anything for 10 seconds. It's not like you have to sit there for 10 months like that. And, you know, it's going to take forever. It's really not that hard. And the growth that can come from it, you get so much more out of it, so much more valuable than those couple seconds of discomfort.
100%. And our brain's job is to keep us safe. And so when you know, your brain's just trying to keep you safe. And everything I think of as a process, you know, even to go back to when I had cancer and I recognized that I was a perfectionist, it was a process for me to flip the way that I thought and to change the way that I responded to people. And, you know, you can start to build your own evidence of when you do something a little bit different and you get a different result. Like, I remember coming back to work and I had been on this return to work plan. So anybody who's ever gone on long-term disability might be able to identify with this, but they sort of like ease you back into work. Instead of just you're done and you're back to work full time, you sort of over a number of weeks, like will increase the amount of time you're at work. So it might be 2 hours a day. And then like the next week is 3 hours a day, and which is actually amazing. I thought I was just going to go back, but you really need it. Anyways, I was talking to a coworker who was in the kitchen, the admin person who was sort of in charge of the coverage for me. And she had said something like, okay, so next week you're back full time. And I said, oh no, not quite. There's one more week. You know, I think I'm here 7 hours or whatever. And she started to like really react because, you know, I think ultimately, and it didn't matter, but she had made a mistake and hadn't had this coverage for the other week. So she was reacting because she was having that, oh my God, I made a mistake, but like couldn't take it, couldn't handle it. So she started yelling at me about it. And I would say my past self would have been over apologetic. I would have taken on the problem. I would have found a solution. I probably would have started calling supply teachers. I would have taken on like, oh my gosh, I didn't take responsibility for this properly. I made the mistake. And I was able to take this pause because I had just come from this slow place I'd been off of work. And I took this pause and I said to her, I don't like the way that you're speaking to me. A mistake has been made. It doesn't matter who made the mistake. I'm sure we can find a solution, but I'm not ready to talk to you until you can speak to me differently. And I walked away. And I never would have been able to do that before. Like never.
Amazing.
Like I would have broken down in tears before, honestly. And I just having that experience that I did something differently. And then her response was to come over and apologize to me and to work with me on a solution. And it cleared the air. And then she never treated me like that again. And, you know, that whole thing of like you teach people how to treat you, that was the lesson for me there. And I was like, oh my goodness, I can do things differently. And so when you start to choose to do things differently, then you start to see the evidence that supports it. Like, I can do that. I lived through that momentary discomfort of speaking up for myself and it had a positive impact. So next time I'm going to do it again. And that's really a huge, huge part of being able to live intentionally because you are, you know, sort of being thoughtful in how you respond to things, thoughtful about who you show up as, thoughtful about what you allow in your life. And it does take time and it is a process, but, you know, there's the pieces of the puzzle are being able to handle some discomfort, you know, have self-awareness. Pause a little bit before you react. All of those skills can really be supported by things like I always advocate for like a gratitude practice and people to practice meditation because I think they really help you. So the more you sort of like go down this path, the more you can start to build in habits that support you living this way, thinking this way, and doing things differently. And it's incredibly powerful. It just takes a moment to do something different and you can really change so much.
It sure is. All of these things are ways that we can all go and start doing this right now, you know, be more present. And like you said, maybe it's just taking a few seconds before responding to that person to just let it sink in. Because we're so, many of us, definitely me, we can be so reactive, especially in a situation like that where you're kind of like, oh, what's happening right now? And you either, like you said, burst into tears or say something kind of snarky back, like, and, you know, and then feel bad about that. Or it's like just taking those extra couple of seconds can make all the difference in the world with so many things that we do and really changes the way that we show up for ourselves and in turn, the people around us. And it's a beautiful ripple effect. And I find that tiny little things can really add up over time and make such a huge difference.
Yeah, they really, really can. And I think that that's, you know, something for people to remember is that it actually doesn't take a lot to really change things, that ultimately it really just matters how you feel in the present moment. It doesn't matter if you've completely decluttered your house. It doesn't matter if you started that exercise habit and you're doing it the way that you envision doing it every single day. It doesn't matter if you are able to be present every moment of the day, which no one is, but you know, that you've started to, that you put the intention out there and that you've begun to build it immediately changes the way that you feel. And I think it's Eckhart Tolle who says, all you ever have is this present moment. And that's a piece that I carry around with me all the time too, because it's true. We can get caught up on this wheel of wanting things to be different and then feel stuck or unhappy or frustrated with ourselves. But if you could think about the present moment as it is, be in it. Think about what you're content or grateful for now and look for things that make you feel good now, then you've been successful because your life feels good now. And despite whatever happens, whether or not, you know, it's a cancer diagnosis or, you know, whatever other struggles that come into your life, if you can find ways to feel good now, despite that, then you won. And that's it, really. That's the thing. And then when you can do that, then you can start to make those shifts that are going to lead to future change and lead to the things that you want in the future. But allow yourself to enjoy where you are at the moment. Because if you're so focused on the future and what you want and what you want to be different, then you really are wasting your life. And it's not like you're going to get to that place and suddenly be happy then if you can't be happy now. So, you know, take that action for sure to do the things that make life easier. You know, declutter your house. It feels amazing and it makes life easier and it's going to help you really understand yourself, because the more you declutter, the more you're going to dig into yourself and be like, oh wow, that I'm keeping that because of like this like childhood trauma or, you know, this experience I had. And you're going to start to get to know yourself, and that's amazing, but you're not going to do it overnight. So just find the ways that you can love your life where you are. And that's the secret.
That is beautiful. And you are so wise. I think it's taken me a long time. I am learning these lessons now. It's taken me a really long time to get there. But I think you just hit the nail on the head. This stuff's so important. And I appreciate you sharing all of this with us. I was going to ask you what you want to leave people with today, but I think you just did it and it was perfect. So
awesome.
I want to thank you for being here and taking the time to talk with us today. I want to remind everybody, I'll include links in the show notes so that everybody can find you, but I know you have something special coming up very soon. So please tell us.
Yeah. So coming up really soon is a summit that I've organized with some other incredible speakers. I think it's going to be an amazing event. I want people to think about it as if you were going to show up to a live event, but it's virtual. It will spread out over 4 days. So there'll be 3 days with speakers, and then you'll have one more day to catch up and listen to any of those speakers that you've missed. But it's intentionally only available for a short period of time, because I found when I sign up for something that I have lifetime access to, I don't often come back to it. So this is something that I've sort of intentionally structured this way so that I'm really hoping to support people to come and show up and be there. And then if you miss somebody or two people and you want to catch up on the fourth day, you absolutely can. Even if you show up and catch one of these amazing speakers, you will have gained something, and you'll be able to sign up through a link in my bio. So you can definitely check it out. It is a paid event, but it's a low cost event. But again, this is very intentional because I have signed up for many of free things and never showed up. So I really thought this out about how I could support people the best way. And I really think that having a little bit of skin in the game and having some structure and a deadline is going to help you show up, help you gain something from it. All of these speakers have incredible things to share that will help you be more intentional about the way you live. So all the details and the information, again, you can find through the link in my bio or check out my website or Instagram, and there will be information about it there. And that will be the weekend of January 27th and 28th. And yeah, I think that should be really exciting as you get to the end of January and you sort of lost some of your oomph to get back in the game.
It's perfect timing, actually. And especially at that point in the winter, everybody's looking for something inspiring. So awesome. I will share that as well. And I'll be checking it out myself. It sounds really great. Awesome. So Sarah, again, thank you for being here today and sharing all of your beautiful wisdom with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This is just, having conversations with other women about this sort of thing is one of my favorite things to do, because I think the more we support each other, the more we really can change the world.
Yes. Yes. Beautifully said. I hope you enjoyed today's episode and have been inspired to slow down and start living life at your own pace. As a brand new podcast, your listener voice matters. If Let's Slow Down is resonating with you, please take a minute to leave a review and rate us. Subscribe to the show wherever you listen and share it with friends. Remember, this is a process, so go easy on yourself. Be gentle and take all the space you need to thrive, because the world needs you to be at your best, to love and serve others and yourself.